Hello, and welcome to Dig It. I'm Peter Brown, and hosting the show with me today is Chris Day. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Peter.
Wow. Some frost, some sunshine.
A bit more rain, Peter.
It's all, every single weather is out there at the moment. We even had hail here the last couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
We did. Somebody said, one of our customers said, you can have four seasons in a day in this part of the world. I think in any part of the world at the moment, looking at the TV screens in the last few weeks.
Definitely. It's certainly changeable at the moment. Anyway, that's enough of the weather.
You did. We have that preoccupation with it. But it's a busy month, isn't it,
May? Yeah, what's on? Well, where should we go and visit this month, Chris?
Indeed. Well, let's start off down in Exeter at Kenton for Toby Buckland's Garden Festival at Powderham Castle, which I've never heard of.
Powderham Castle, yes. Toby's been here, hasn't he?
He has, yes.
Maybe we should give him a bell, see if he wants to come on our podcast.
That would be rather nice, wouldn't it? Yes, I'm sure. So that's, the 3rd and 4th of May, so it's a, And then on the 3rd to the 5th, it's Gardeners, BBC Gardeners World Spring Fair at the National Motor Museum at Bewley.
Okay.
In Hampshire, in a lovely part of the world.
I've been to the National Motor Museum, just because I love cars, but I've not been to a Gardener's World there yet.
Obviously Bewley's famous for its rhododendrons and other things as well, that part of the world as well, isn't it? It's a
lime-free area then.
And lots of gorse at this time of year when you're driving that part of the world. It's a yellow sea of loveliness, really. So that's the 3rd and 5th, and then the 9th to the 12th we've got the biggie, one of the many biggies, the RHS Malvern Spring Festival at the Three Counties Showground at Malvern. Beautiful, beautiful setting for a lovely show.
So it used to be called the Malvern Spring Fair, didn't it? It's a festival.
I think they do a little bit of tweaking with the names, don't they? Just to, maybe to attract. But there's lots of food and drink as well as lots of flowers and plants. On the 12th of May, we've got another one of these wonderful spring plant fairs at Board Hill. That's over in Haywards Heath, West Sussex. Again, a lovely venue. And then we have to cross the water. We have to go over to our friends over in France for the big Fleurs International, which is almost like our Chelsea Flower Show.
Oh, right.
But with a sort of French spin. And this year, being 2024, it's going to be all about the Olympic Games. They're going to do a real nice tribute to the one. Because the last time it was in Paris was 100 years ago. So they've got a lot to celebrate. Yeah.
Fair enough.
So Flower Games is going to be the theme. So that sounds good. So we'll put a link on the show notes to find out more about that. The 20th of May, something close to your heart, Peter, it's World Bee Day. So obviously it's trying to obviously preserve and make sure we keep the right ecosystems for our buzzy friends.
Yeah, because bees have been struggling so far this spring because it was warm, so it woke all the bees up, and then it rained, so they can't fly out of the... They had a good start to the year, got lots of pollen in, got some new nectar in, and then obviously all the rain, on rainy days they don't fly, so they then eat all of the stores that they've been creating. Then some people are losing bees at the moment, but if you are a beekeeper, the tip that I read this morning was feed them, give them some fondant and just keep on feeding them for the next...
I suppose the only good thing is we've got lots of flowers open at the moment, so when it doesn't rain and the sun does give a bit of warmth, they'll be out in force. And then the 21st to the 25th, it's the biggie, the RHS Chelsea Flower Show at the good old Royal Hospital grounds in Chelsea, London. Obviously a ticket affair. You'll probably see more on the TV from my experience of going to the Chelsea Flower Show, but it's so good. It's an amazing event. It's something you've got to do. It's got to be on your bucket list, I'd say.
Definitely. Well, hopefully one year I'll get to go there.
And then we've got some smaller flower shows, but I say smaller by comparison. The 25th to the 28th of May, we're at the Blenheim Palace Flower Show just down the road at Woodstock in Oxfordshire. A really good event now. It's really
grown, hasn't it? It started off as quite a small event, and they've obviously really pushed it. And it's now one of the places to go.
It has your usual star names there, some nice gardens to look at. So a good visit, and of course, a wonderful backdrop is that amazing Blenheim Palace itself, isn't it?
Well, and the gardens.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that's another one, a bit like our last podcast about Stowe. I think Capability Brown had some influence there.
Oh, we did. Yes, definitely.
And, yeah, it's a very grand garden. Very. I think almost, I mean, the palace, or is it a palace?
Palace, yes.
Yeah, it's a... I must say, it's even more ornate than Stowe is, but it's certainly worth a visit if you're in the area.
Most definitely. Wonderful grounds, yeah. You can, so, I mean, you do the flower show and then go back and do the grounds the following day almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then towards the end of the month, which is obviously in view of the garden centre world, we've got obviously National Children's Gardening Week, which is 25th. Of May through to the 2nd of June, so we're just each into next month. And again, like last year, which was very successful, the theme is the world of Peter Rabbit. Plenty of, there's going to be a wonderful Grow with Peter Rabbit activity booklets at all participating garden centres, which I know we've got our...
we've signed up for, come in and get yourself a little pack.
Indeed. And then, right at the end of the month, we're going over to Dublin in Ireland for the famous Board Buyer Bloom, which, of course, is, a wonderful show, which, again, over the years, Peter's built up because it's quite a horticultural experience for visitors.
Okay.
Again, it works on the food and drink as another main pull as well to draw the visitors. So a lot going on in the merry month of May.
I wonder what board means in Irish, because you've got Bord na Mona,
indeed,
which is obviously the peat, or what used to be the peat company. It's now a compost company. Must look that one up.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, that's a few places to go and visit.
It is, yes.
What about the news? What we got coming up
in
the news?
It's a very mixed bag, but I think we'll start on one thing, which, I mean, if any of you like your British beer, this news story certainly got me looking at it. So, basically, our poor hop plants are under threat from a major fungal disease called verticillium. So, verticillium wilt is...
I was going to say, that's like the leaves change colour from memory. And
that's it.
They sort of... then shrivel up and, it doesn't look good.
No, a lot of plants get it. I mean, I think tomato plants can get it as well. And hence that's why a lot of tomato plants are grafted now commercially.
All right, okay.
So basically they're doing lots of work now. This is over in the University of Kent, and they're doing a massive five-year project, spending £574,000 on this research. So... it's going to be important because the brewing industry in this country is worth £10 billion. So it's essential that we get to the problem.
Kent used to be the hop garden of England, didn't it? Traditionally, I don't think there's quite so many hops grown.
Yeah,
but when you're driving around and you see these massive telegraph poles and wires going across fields, I mean the hop plant is an incredible. Sort of grower, isn't it?
It
goes from absolutely nothing up to a massive great bush in such a short time.
And that's right,
obviously.
Yeah, and this news report will say that, 50% now of hops are grown in Kent, so it has reduced a lot to what it used to be. And obviously, it is still important, but I suppose when you've got that, maybe that's part of the problem, because they're growing it in that area, continuously, that might have a problem with crop rotation, and that might be leading to the problems with the verticillium, I don't know. But
I wonder if it's it's a sort of more worldwide issue, because obviously these days we get... are hops from all over the world, and certainly the New World hops, as they're known, grown, and then you get the American hops and the ones from New Zealand, which are quite often the fruity ones. But it's a big industry.
It is, yeah. And as gardeners, we tend to see the humulus opulus. I think it's urea, the yellow leaf,
the golden one.
Yellow,
is it?
Yellow, and that's a good grower. I mean, that, like you say, it comes up from nothing, doesn't it? It literally dies down to an absolute, is a true herbaceous plant, and then of course puts all this amazing amount of growth on. So a nice plant to have in the garden if you want a nice coverage of an eyesore.
Things like trellis, I always picture it growing on along fences. I mean, it's a sticky old plant. It's one of those ones that when you touch it, it's really quite fibrous and sticky.
Good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, and elsewhere, again, looking at lots of scientific work, the Kew scientists are, again, looking at this assessing this extinction risk of species, and they're using this good old computer modelling again. I think we already chatted about this a little bit a while back, but more data's coming in now, and they're worried about, is it 328,000 known species of flowering plants are under this potential threat, what with climate change and obviously changes in cultivation. We'll put the link on there, but they're hopeful that they can obviously curb this potential loss of many, many species, and they've got lots of sort of structures in place to try and, fully look at the situation and make sure it doesn't get any worse.
So yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
And Mr. Titch Marsh has hit the headlines.
He has indeed. Yeah. So the trade magazine Horticulture Week, which obviously is it's the go-to place for our trade news, they ran a poll of what products and people have impacted gardening over the last 50 years.
Okay.
And Mr. T came top. He beat Monty Don.
Okay.
And, of course, the late and great Jeff Hamilton. So, they're quite a there.
That's interesting, isn't it? And obviously bagged compost.
Mm.
That also hit the headlines with the fact that it's transformed the way we garden.
Yes.
In the sense of, I suppose, we no longer buy it in a horse and cart. It comes in a nice recycled plastic bag.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's gone from being peat-based to...
Peat-free. Yeah. It's interesting. And also, I think with garden centres, I mean, garden centres are probably just over 50 years old now, aren't they? But if you think before that, we didn't have containerised plants. So, and that was fueled by, obviously, the invention of plastic, which, of course, is now a bit of a dull word to use. But, of course, that's the way things move on, isn't it, I suppose?
Fair. And if you're going to the seaside?
So this story is, if you've been down to Torquay, Torbay, that's Brixham and the whole area there, you would not miss the wonderful cabbage palms, isn't it? The Coeur d'Alene. And apparently 40 new ones are going to be going into position.
Oh, right, okay.
Because they obviously lost a few over the years, and they're going to be revamped, and they're spending quite a lot of money on here, over £30,000 to create the Garden of the Century. So they're really going for it,
okay.
which is good, and it's a lovely part of the world, isn't it?
I've not had the pleasure of being down there since my childhood, I think. I rarely get down to the South Coast. I always think it's such a long way driving-wise.
It's quite a way, sort of.
Norfolk is my seaside destination.
So that's all good news for obviously the tourists and the locals of Torbay. And we've got another record breaker.
Okay, what's hit the record books this week then?
Well, it's a blueberry.
Oh, right.
And when you see photographs of this blueberry, it is the size of a golf ball, basically.
Wow.
And it's grown in Australia, it's not grown in the UK, and it took a long time to grow. In fact, it took many, many months, in fact, 9 months, to actually put on its growth. It took 12 months to grow, sorry, not nine, but 12 months to grow and to produce.
Okay.
And it weighed in at 20.4 grams, and that's 4.2 grams heavier than the previous record. So we're talking a heavy...
Because blueberries, you always think, sort of maybe a couple of centimetres across if you're lucky, but this one must be quite huge.
Indeed. Well, when I put a small handful of those on my cereal sometimes, I wouldn't be able to do these, obviously. But so the variety to look out for is a Turner.
So it's a commercial. It's not just a one-off. It's being grown from a commercial crop that you can actually get your hands on. So
that's it.
That's really good. And they're saying it's a crisp texture and a nice flavour, and it's got a long shelf life. So hopefully a good one.
A good one, yeah, and good tolerance to pests and diseases. So it's a bit of a win-win, isn't it? It's
really,
nice one. And whilst we're on the subject of fruit, or is it a vegetable? This is always a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? Rhubarb.
Don't know, Chris. It's a stem, isn't it? So is it a vegetable?
Well, that's it. Yeah. I see. But then you cook it as you would a fruit, though. You'd sweeten it.
Yeah.
We always, when I many years ago, Peter, when I used to work on the gardening magazines, we used to have a library of in the days of, you know, slides and 35 mil transparencies. And we used to find, they used to put rhubarb in both the vegetables and the fruit because
no one knows.
Yeah, so it was always one of the conundrum there. But of course, the most famous part of the rhubarb culture in the UK, and it is unique, is the so-called Yorkshire rhubarb triangle.
Yeah.
And there's a chap called Rhubarb Robert, a.k.a. Robert Tomlinson, who's the fourth generation farmer of this particular farm near Pudsey, famous Pudsey in Yorkshire, who is basically really promoting on his socials the virtues of rhubarb growing. I mean, it's a really weird crop because it has to be grown in the dark, so it has to be harvested by candlelight. I don't know of any other vegetable or fruit harvested in a very unique way, unless, of course, our Digit listeners can tell us something new. I don't know, but certainly it is quite unique, isn't it, for a crop to grow, be grown effectively forced with warmth.
Well, I suppose that's it, isn't it? Because whenever I think of forcing rhubarb, I think of those amazing great terracotta sort of pots that you put on upside down over the rhubarb, and that just gives them the darkness and the warmth and gets them growing. But I guess commercially, they're doing it in, I'm going to say, multi-spans or sort of polytunnels type things and blackening them out. So that would...
Yeah, it's a bit
of a different situation, but equally, you'd think, why... Presumably, if they put some red lights in there, would that not work candle lights are mixed white lights, so that's going to get them growing. But I don't know much about light. And
I think the light issue is such that they have to use candlelight because that short spectrum of light doesn't affect the actual crop, so they can actually see what they're cutting rather than helping it to grow, which is quite unique. It is literally far part of the harvesting, isn't it?
It's very interesting. I guess we'll have to do some more digging.
Yeah, indeed. Yes, and by the way, the rhubarb is the same type as you would grow outside, so it's nothing special in that respect. It's just the way it's cool. It's growing. Dark. Yeah, yeah.
Very good.
Okay, and news-wise, we've got a few. There's actually a few awards. It's the award season in horticulture. Good old Tom Stewart Smith. He received the recent. He received his OBE over at Windsor Castle, and obviously he's been a major contender in the whole area of garden design, especially for the larger RHS shows, especially Chelsea and Hampton Court over the years. So that was well deserved. And in fact, we'll probably talk about some other awards which have been coming along a little bit later, Peter. But it's that sort of season now for the awards. And another slight. To take us slightly off track, pardon the pun, the revival of railway hedges. So this is basically, they're trialling, it's a major trial actually, to see if they can get traditional railway hedges back between North London stations along one of the busiest main lines. And it's a cooperation between Network Rail and the Tree Council. So, we're all familiar with farmers putting in mixed native hedging, but this is obviously to help, again, with sustainability, to help with soil erosion, and to put these sort of corridors of nature.
I was going to say, it must be amazing. It's a very good thought for growing wildlife corridors, like they do in South America now, to try and keep patches of forest alive and what have you, with all the ecosystems that are involved. And it's a good idea, I'd say. Why not? And ultimately, you quite often, when you're going on the train, the sides and the banks are left to grow, and you get trees, and then when they get to a certain size, is it the railway board? I don't know who looks after the road and the tracks these days, but they come along and chop them all down, and then 5 years later, they've all grown back up again. And it's a big amount of space, I should imagine, that could be rewilded.
Indeed, and I think the good thing about this as well is the fact that we've had so many landslides, haven't we, along some of the railways, in recent times as well. So obviously, if they use the hedging, that might try and pull the soil together.
But it sticks all the soil together.
It does, yeah.
Right, that's why you plant trees and hedges
for soil erosion, isn't it? Yeah. So that's good. So and they're trialling it. They're using it for growing from plants from whips and such like, and using contractors. And obviously, they're further. They've got to do it very cost effectively because obviously there's a lot of train line to potentially fill.
Good few
well.
Miles of hedging then.
Yeah,
that's good.
So
brilliant.
And
I hear ciders now. Well, not under attack, but struggling a bit, like the hops are, and so beer and cider production in the UK might be going down. But what's happening with cider apples then?
So this is actually, in quite a way, a more uplifting story that they're basically trying to identify lost apples, and they're using sort of DNA fingerprinting and also geopositioning of these varieties. So they're pinpointing exactly where they are in the orchards, and then obviously going through the necessary processes for apple identification, which I think is quite amazing, really. So
when we did the podcast with Mike, it was I had no idea sort of how old cider apples were and how sort of where they evolved from, and I think if you can use something like DNA, presumably we might lose a few varieties just from the fact that what's named as this...
That's the thing, isn't it?
They've got the same different names, but they're the same apple.
Yeah, so I suppose all the sort of name varieties are going to be different from those which have obviously popped up saplings from pips and such like that. Perhaps it might give our good old apple identification expert, Jerry Edwards, a help, though, because that might narrow things down.
But equally, he is amazing. When you can bring an apple in and he can identify it.
Fantastic work, isn't it?
Incredible.
No machine could do that.
He should go for a Guinness Book of Records record, because I reckon he might be able to name that will taste the most number of and identify the most number of apples in the country.
I think on one of our more busier weekends over the years, he's done sort of 50 or 60 in a day, so, and it's just incredible from that.
Excellent. Now, seeing Horticulture Week, they've updated their list of 100 leading women in horticulture.
It's quite an impressive list, though, isn't it?
It's a huge, great list. You don't realise sort of how many big names there really are behind the scenes. Didn't realise they're doing that.
Some nice names. I noticed our previous podcast guests, both Val Bourne and Jacob McVicar, on the list there. So that's some notorieties amongst the group there as well. And of course, the wonderful work from Fiona Taylor at Garden Organics too. So.
I guess that's it. There's an awful lot of women in horticulture, which is fantastic. We can say we're a diversified and gender neutral working environment.
And some more research, but actually quite fascinating, Peter, about bee friendliness as far as the big bee hotel experiment.
Oh right, okay.
So I didn't know this. Around 250 out of the 270 UK bee species lead solitary lives. So I didn't think it was such a high number, to be honest with you.
20 out of the 270 communal species, and the rest of them like each other. Yeah, it's interesting. But I guess you think like mason bees and obviously, honeybees we think of as swarming and their community species, but the rest of them,
we've seen a lot of these sort of bee hotels sort of coming into, you see them everywhere now in lots of shops and not necessarily garden centres, actually. I've spotted them in supermarkets and things. They've become a sort of an accessorise your garden. But of course, these produce the wonderful structures which will hopefully help to provide potential nesting sites for these solitary bees, and that's what they want to do a little bit of work too, to find out which are probably best, which work best for particular species, and to help.
It's really good research, because certainly I know you see all these old pallets that people have stuffed different sized bits of wood in, and canes and all sorts, and you think, I wonder which ones actually work. If you want to attract certain types of bee, if you're only going to get one bee per nest, is it really worth putting a massive amount of energy into creating sort of something a meter square that only has one bee living in it? Really. I don't know. I might be wrong there, but interesting.
They're suggesting like filling drain pipes, as you say, with pieces of hollow stems like bamboo or Leicesteria, which obviously is a plant I grow in my garden, and it does produce a really good you know, good stem tube. Indeed, yep. Yes. So let's see what happens. You can take part. They've got a link. We'll put that on the Digit show notes.
Good stuff. And the Kirchenhof Gardens, which is, the bulb garden of the world, I'm going to say. It is an incredible garden. Yeah. They've announced that in a ceremonial event that Hybris, which is a Dutch company, have launched a new tulip variety called Tulipa King Charles III.
Yes, that's rather nice, isn't it?
It's brilliant.
Fantastic. Yeah, and it's obviously the piece of paper I'm showing you, Peter, is not in colour, but it does look really nice in
it's a lovely gold, isn't it?
Yeah, and so it's a golden yellow, obviously doing its thing in the Netherlands at the moment. So the Kirchenhof Gardens are still open until early part of May, so get a chance to see
it. Yeah, if you're over in Holland, go and have a look at all the lovely bulbs over there.
Fantastic, yeah. And we might see it on the TV screens because the press release sort of suggests it's going to be shown that Monty Don at his garden at Long Meadow is also planted some as well. So we might see that on our TV screens in the next week or two. I suspect, like all press releases, it's embargoed. So that's probably why we haven't seen it just yet.
It'll take a couple of years before it hits the marketplace because obviously they've got to split it and breed it a few times and get it to a few thousand bulbs.
Feed it lots of cheese and I'm sure it'll be fine.
That's it. Good stuff. And gardens are bouncing back.
Yeah, so this is like anything. This is a piece in Garden News magazine, Peter. And it's interesting about the obviously the knock on effect from the COVID pandemic 4 years ago, and how obviously numbers have climbed back since 2019. And there's some definite sort of movers and shakers, as they say. But it's not surprising that the likes of RHS Wisley obviously is doing really well up there.
Nearly 2 million people visited Kew.
And Kew, yes.
I mean, Kew is an amazing garden, without a doubt. I mean, it's architecturally as well, I think it's beautiful.
Fantastic.
Nearly 2 million visitors which is it's not quite as good as 2019, though. That's the figures that I find really interesting, because obviously the COVID pandemic... Mm. People were out an awful lot more before then. But like you say, Wisley's up, but a lot of the gardens are down. But then Dunham Macy,
yeah, that's up in Cheshire, isn't it?
52% rise since 2019.
Which is great. And
people are going out in that part of the world.
which is good. I mean, RHS Bridgewater, I think they've taken a little bit of a knock still. Obviously, that's a new garden comparatively for the RHS, but and that's based up in Manchester. And obviously, good old Hampton Court Palace, which, of course, I suppose it's the palace as much as the gardens is the attraction there too. But all in all, it's encouraging.
No, definitely. And I think always nice if the weather holds out to go and have a look round the garden. It's such a nice experience, isn't it?
Get
out in the big outdoors.
And get infused and you always learn something, don't you? That's the great virtue of garden visiting.
Definitely. And our friends up in Coventry Garden Organic are getting upset with the government.
Yes.
They're saying that the government aren't doing enough and the ban of peat might not happen at the end of this year. So what do you know about this, Chris?
So a couple of weeks ago, Peter, there was what would they call a 10-minute bill was read in the Commons to try and move this on, because obviously the end of last year, the King's speech didn't contain the important bit of criteria to effectively put into law that peat would be banned.
Okay.
It wasn't read, it wasn't included. So therefore,
they've got to pass an act or something, have they, to get it to actually happen?
Yeah. So obviously this is obviously not good news for the gardening trade, because obviously we've been set up to effectively lose peat by the end of this year.
Yeah.
And it was always a bit of a thing, was it going to be the beginning of the year or was it going to be the end? That was the big contention. Well, at the moment, it still could be 2025. You know, if we look at it, if this doesn't go through quickly, and of course, as we're probably not make any bones about it, it is an election year this year, isn't it?
I was going to say, is it an election year this year, Chris? Maybe someone's pushed it back off the statute list, and we'll debate it next year just to push it out. But the thing that I am so proud of our industry about is the fact that we knew it was in the pipeline.
Yes.
20 years ago.
That's right.
And unfortunately, I'm going to say the sales of non-peat based products up until a few years ago were not good. The product wasn't good.
Very variable, wasn't it?
Over the last few years, I think our industry has really pulled its finger out and changed the options available to us. And now we've got some much better composts out there that are peat-free and really usable. And we're getting around the watering issues. It's not perfect, but as gardeners, we are adapting.
We
and
are.
We've adapted incredibly quickly. Yeah. And now the government aren't going to ban it. So maybe we'll just get to the happy medium where we can use peat in a few composts, but so long as the
ones, maybe.
So long as the majority of it is peat-free, then potting up your Venus flytrap won't be such of a so much of a problem, because there'll be a specialist peat-based compost for that. But if you want to put your impatiens in it, it's not available. It's more for... specialist, but
It does seem very strange, and I'm, you know, being very cynical about this. 2020 was the year it should have happened, but of course we had a, you know, we had a major pandemic, so a lot of things went back on the back burner. And obviously,
well, there's a lot of parties in Parliament, weren't there?
Well, there were.
You can't. You must forgive them for being so busy.
Indeed, yes. Well, that intended. So let's see what happens. But I think there's going to be quite a lot of pressure. So maybe in the UK, if you're talking to your potential candidates, maybe ask them about the peat.
Ask them whether they're going to ban peat or not.
Yeah. See what result you get from that. But it's not good. And it's good that the Garden Organics are bringing it to the attention through the little piece in Amateur Gardening magazine.
Definitely. Yeah. And I see one of our previous podcast guests has won a rather prestigious award.
He has, Peter. It's Charles Dowding, our
no-dig champion. I love his philosophy on gardening.
Fantastic, wasn't it?
My compost heap is doing well.
Good.
I created a compost heap with the idea of using the proceeds from the compost heap just to try a bit of no-dig gardening.
It's working out. Good, yeah. So he received the RHS Elizabeth Medal of Honour, the EMH.
Okay.
And that's for awarded to non-horticulturists making an outstanding contribution to horticulture and gardening. Of course, his no-dig method is certainly the right credentials, isn't it?
You do. Definitely, that's
so
brilliant.
Well done to Charles there. And so the RHS, basically, there's 63 horticulturists can hold the Victoria Medal in horticulture at any one time.
Yep.
So this year we've got two incumbents. Chris Lane, nurseryman over in Kent. He's recognised for his practical skills and knowledge of woody plants and books and national plant collections. He's got the national collection of Hemimalis, witch hazels and things. And another chap by the name of Neil Lucas, he runs Knoll Gardens, and he's ornamental grass specialist, and he's so two new recipients, and of course, we spoke to one of the recipients of this wonderful award, a couple of years ago, didn't we? Good old Jackie McVicar. So
yeah, she's got one as well, hasn't she? It's a very prestigious award, isn't
it? It's a wonderful accolade, to have. Yeah. So a lot of awards this podcast.
Peter. Definitely, good stuff. And Great Yarmouth's Winter Gardens.
Now,
I remember Winter Gardens in Milton Keynes.
Right.
It certainly doesn't look like this one in Great Yarmouth. I mean, what a fabulous Victorian building.
Lots of wonderful architecture there.
It reminds me a bit of the Eiffel Tower, the sort of all the scrolls and the ironwork. It's amazing. Sort of cross between Kew Gardens, Glasshouse, and the Eiffel Tower. But anyway, so they're going to revamp it, and
it's had a big grant, £12.3 million lottery grant from the Heritage Fund to give it a new lease of life. And and they're going to reimagine it as the People's Palace. It's going to be almost renamed as well, which I think is quite nice. It's going to be giving a bit more personality, perhaps, than being called the Winter Garden structure or whatever.
Well, it's probably still a good place to go and shelter from winter storms, whatever they do with it, isn't it? But it's nice to see there's six paid apprenticeships being created in catering and hospitality, so
yes, it's all good. We're going to
have a good tea room there, I'm guessing.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, it's going to look amazing. It's going to look amazing.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And then our favourite show to watch on television, Chelsea, this year is now going to be Green.
Yes, yeah, and it's going to have an audit. They're going to basically go around and they're going to look at the amount of waste created, the selection of the materials, the impact on biodiversity, water and air quality. So they're going to be effectively judged on the whole structure of the garden, which is a first.
Well, I mean, the thing that always I can never get my head round is cement and sort of paving slabs and things like that are always pretty bad when it comes to environmental impact. And I guess it's the amount of heat and energy that's used to make the cement.
That's it.
Yeah, so now they're replacing it with wood, and I'm hoping maybe some of the waterfalls are going to be solar-powered waterfalls rather than the pump-fed ones. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's a very sensible thing to do, isn't it? We've got limited resources, so why not use them sensibly?
Yeah.
Still create amazing gardens, can't we?
Of course, and it makes you just have to just basically then identify all the the materials you're using and scrutinise it perhaps a little bit more.
Yeah,
which I think is can only be a good thing in the process of designing a garden. So, hats off to them, and that will be happening this year for the first time.
Mm.
And actually, on the RHS, Peter, some breaking news for us today because it's only just been released as we're recording this. So the latter end of the month, the RHS have announced that some of their much-loved shows will tour to varying locations. So,
oh, right. Okay. Is this a bit like the photography shows where they start off in London and then go around the good museums of the country? That's good.
Yeah. So basically, after 2024, the 25th anniversary of the RHS Flower Show at Tatton will return to its site every 3 years.
Right.
In between, it will go 2025. It will go to Wentworth Woodhouse, which is up in Sheffield. So it's moving from Tatton to that part. Yeah, so it's from Cheshire to Yorkshire.
Yep.
And then the next year, it goes to the Sandringham Estate, which of course is the private country retreat of the Her Majesty the King Charles and Queen Camilla. So yes, that's interesting. But what I found quite interesting is the Malvern show and the Chelsea Flower show won't be moving. However, the Hampton Court Palace show will become a biennial event. So every other year, it'll go to Bamington Estate over in Gloucestershire. So that'll move around the country. And the whole idea of this is to basically, for the RHS members, it'll mean that it'll be on their doorstep for a lot of people.
Yep.
And also, it'll hopefully keep a lot of people will be seeing the RHS for the first time because it'll be on their patch. It'll be on the, in their
It will encourage new people to go and visit, and hopefully equally be environmentally friendly because they're moving the show rather than making everybody drive to the show.
And I'm sure perhaps for some of the exhibitors it might be a little bit of a headache, but they've had plenty of pre-warning. A number of years off now, a year at least. So, but yeah, it is a major shift, and hopefully new audiences will meet more gardeners.
Brilliant, good stuff. I'm just thinking about Sandringham, His Royal Highness's parks in London. They're after some apprentices.
They're looking for 10, actually, Peter. So it's the Royal Parks Charity, and they maintain all the London's Royal Parks. And, they're looking to encourage some new apprentice gardeners with the opportunity of 3 years training, and including horticultural and landscape operative level qualification too. So, it's really good. You don't often see this sort of promoted, and it's just it's heartwarming, really, that we are really trying to push the new, the next generation of gardeners. And, it should be good. So, if you go head over to the Royal Parks web pages, you'll find all the details there.
Brilliant. Well, I'd never realised there's 5,000 acres of parkland in London.
I know.
Just amazing.
Yes.
I can remember cycling through one of them on my Ride 100 when that went through London. That
okay.
It's just interesting seeing sort of deer and
big sort of Richmond Park, I suppose. Yes.
Big expanses of grass in the centre of London. It's lovely.
It's good stuff. So and look out for the details, I'll say, on the
if you want an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And, well, interesting that potato farmers are warning of potential shortages. Almost. It's sad times. I mean, obviously the rain has caused issues, but I know it's the first season I can ever remember wireworm being a problem in crops that were being sold to garden centres. I don't think I've ever come across that before.
No.
And obviously, I guess if farmers are struggling to grow them, that's going to push the price up a bit.
It is,
Our staple food. It's going to be a bit scarcer this winter, this summer and winter.
Indeed, and I think sea potatoes generally, Peter, sold out very early this year. So there's obviously a pent up demand for growing potatoes, whether it's earlies or mid seasons or main crop. So, which is good. But and I think the fact that a lot of these potato growers specialise in certain varieties, they work as a bit of a cooperative, don't they? So they will grow, you know, something like International Kidney, and they may have maybe three or four growers, and of course if they have major problems with their crop, then of course that impacts on the supply chain to everybody. So and I didn't know for the problems we've got with our potatoes we buy in the shops and the supermarkets, it costs around about £3,000 an acre to grow a humble spud, and of course they get the money whatever comes out of the ground. So if they've been, you know, hit by waterlogging and maybe disease or blight, that's a big hit, isn't it, for them?
Definitely. So, and well, I think that's it at the end of the day. If areas of land are no longer usable because of the water, it's going to take a big impact on the potatoes. But I think we obviously import a fair few potatoes from abroad, don't we?
We do indeed, yeah.
Hopefully other places won't have had the problems we had.
Let's hope not.
And our last story this month, Henchman Topiary Awards.
Yes.
This is interesting. I mean, I love topiary. I know one of the gardens that really inspired me, Rockingham Castle. I mean, they're just amazing great yews that have been sculpted into, they call it elephant topiary, don't they?
And that's it,
really nice. And the view from there is amazing down over Rockingham Speedway, which I've never been to, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
So topiary is... Yep. It's without a doubt, it's such a nice thing to do if you've got the time.
And it shows also, you know, demonstrates a lot of exceptional skill, doesn't it, and creativity, and of course to keep those wonderful shapes looking so pristine as well. I always think Levens Hall up in Cumbria. They have, I think they have the World Guinness Book of Record of number of toparies. I think it's over 100.
Wow.
And some of these go back to the sort of 16th, 17th century, so really old. I mean, very, very old.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously very famous for its toparies. But, yeah, so basically the Henchman Topiary Awards, they're looking for the best of the best, basically. So you can nominate and obviously contact Henchman at their topiary awards. We'll put the link on there. And... give some sort of accolade to these amazing artists of topiary.
Fantastic. Good stuff. And now it's top five sales in liquid fertilisers. I'm really interested by this one, Chris. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
It is. And, we're all probably thinking about getting our tomatoes and our bedding plants and a lot of our other container plants fed now. Now we're into the growing season. So
tomato feed makes the bottom of the list, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So that's the DOF product, that's the concentrate, the 1 litre size. And then at number four, we've got the liquid grow more concentrate, which is a good general feed, so great for most of your container plants and maybe a lot of your plants in the board as well. I think, Peter, it's worth saying, isn't it, with all this rain, we're going to need to do a lot of feeding this year anyway.
I suppose so, yeah, because it's all going to get washed out a lot quicker, isn't it? So,
yeah, especially in the soil and in the pots as well, I suppose. At number three, we've got the rose feed concentrate, from DOF, popular. Of course, roses winter that time of the year. I did notice one of my roses has got a flower bud on it already. I've never known for April to have a flower bud showing on a rose, so that'll benefit from there. Number two, Ericaceous concentrate feed, again from DOF. Camellias, I suppose. most thing, and obviously Ericaceous, your rhododendrons.
Some fabulous flowers this year, I thought, the camellias.
Aren't they? Yes.
Interesting that sort of good year for camellias.
Most dear, yeah. And at number one, surprise, surprise, Levington's Tomerite. Obviously, the brand leader, isn't it?
It's incredible because it's a little bit more expensive than the Doff version, but.
Yeah,
fundamentally, it's obviously advertising works, and it must be a good product.
Indeed, it is, isn't it? And there's usually promotional offers on, you know, get extra percentage on for your money. So, yeah, they keep it nice and fresh and very current, don't they? So, yeah,
well, and also the fact that you don't just feed tomatoes with it, do you? And
that's the thing, isn't it?
Well, I must admit, I put some tomato food in my watering can the other day because I'm growing sunflowers with James, and I thought, well, they're in seed compost at the moment.
Yep.
Seed compost doesn't have much fertilizer in. Probably worth giving them a little feed now. Yeah. And yeah, they certainly seem to appreciate it. They've shot up another inch.
Good.
So quickly, don't they?
They sunflowers. Do, yeah. Turn your back and they've grown. And the great thing is both tomato feeds, both the Doff and the Tomerite, they contain seaweed, which, of course, is a natural biostimulant. So it's a win-win for our plants. So, it's a good one this month, I think.
Mm. And then the bit that I never seem to get round to doing. What should we be doing? What jobs have you got for us this month? I'll tell you what I have done, though, Chris.
Go on.
I was looking at I wanted to grow some Padron peppers this year.
Yes.
And I planted a load
and
went on holiday for a week.
Okay.
And I thought, well, they're going to dry out. So I put them outside where it's a bit colder and came back and it had rained and the propagator filled up with water. So they were all swimming, all the pots were swimming around in the water.
Oops. Right.
So I drained them down and surprise, surprise, nothing has germinated yet.
Yes.
So a couple of weeks ago, I planted another propagator up with a load of Padron peppers and nothing happened.
Right.
And I was like, what's going on here? So I went on YouTube.
like you do.
The encyclopedia of all things. And there's really good videos on there. And they explained that, it takes 2 to 3 weeks.
Yes.
They need a nice warm temperature.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, maybe I'm just being a bit impatient.
Yes.
So last week I had 14 little seedlings pop up.
There you go.
And I was like, yay, we got them. They do. You just got to be patient and keep on watering and keep them at the right temperature, and they do sprout. But one of the suggestions they made was putting your seeds in the fridge for a few days before you try and sort of get
good
them
advice.
Out to plant them.
Yes. So
you'd say, yes, that's a good one.
Yeah, because it straight away gives the seed that effect of winter, so it gives it a chill.
Right.
You then put it into some compost, which hopefully the ambient air temperature is going to be sort of 16 degrees.
Yep.
Yeah, bingo.
That gets some really
go going. Yeah.
And the other one that I picked up was some of them were recommending scarification in tea.
Tea.
So soak your seeds in tea. Because apparently they're saying the tannins work as a natural.
Yeah, abrasive, sort of, I suppose. Yeah,
is it an abrasive? A sort of chemical scarifier that tell the seeds time to get moving, get on with spring, and off you go. So I thought, well, this year maybe I shall try a little experiment and plant some of my runner beans after they've been soaked in tea. Because with my runner bean seeds, I always soak them overnight in damp kitchen towel that's really, quite wet. So they get sort of 12 hours in good moist conditions. So if I put some in, some moist tea-soaked kitchen roll and some in water, and we'll see if it makes a difference.
Non-scientific experiment, we love those, don't we?
Yeah, but
it's good stuff, though.
Some good tips on seed planting.
Yeah. So this year, my sweet peas, I normally soak my sweet peas in water overnight.
Right.
This year, I haven't done, and my germination's probably about 80%.
Is that better than normal?
It's about the same. It's about the same.
Okay.
So so have I been going through the process unnecessarily? I don't know, but
interesting.
It's a good thing. Yeah,
but I must say, when I do it with my runner beans, my enormous runner beans, and you see them swell up. So you think, well, it must have done some
good. Gosh, yeah, yes,
ultimately, indeed. Seeds germinate when they've got warmth and moisture. And
they need that combination.
Yeah,
don't they?
All the right things. Yeah, so I guess it's seed planting time of year, isn't it?
That's right. And, you know, you've still got plenty of time to sow things like your sweet corn, obviously all your beans. I did my Cobra French beans yesterday, actually.
Okay.
So I've got those there. Cucumbers, obviously still time to do tomatoes, would you believe? Because they grow incredibly quickly. Obviously your chilies and your peppers, courgettes and even your melons. So, you know, warmth is the key, isn't it? And it's been such a cold, in the UK anyway, we've been so cold and damp. We're in catch-up really at the moment. But it's just the frost really, I suppose, Peter. Now we've just got to watch carefully for. We've had some cold nights in April.
Well, last week's frosts.
Yes.
I know that was, and when the show goes out, that was April, but equally it's very late for frosts this year.
Yeah, I mean, for so many things, so many of our flowers in the garden, you know, all the, obviously the crab apples have been amazing. I mean, a lot of things have been so much earlier, which is obviously good and bad for both wildlife and for us. But I think when it comes to plants and triggering them off into growth, we do need some decent weather,
warmth,
which warmth and anything like that. So yeah, a lot to be getting with. Of course, you know, in the UK we have bank holidays top and bottom of the month as well, don't we? So plenty of time, the opportunity to get out and do stuff too, which is good. So tender plants, I suppose, your bedding plants, you might want to start thinking about planting those up. The Kinder pop-in drop-ins, they've been...
They came out the other week, didn't they?
Yeah,
time to get your hanging baskets planted up.
Yep, and all those sort of plants are now available, so get on there. And you know, be savvy, because plants, you know, we're still having issues with supplies and things, so, you know, don't think about, you know, think about buying them. If you need them, get them, because you'll probably come back and they'll have gone.
They'll have gone.
Yeah, which is obviously very frustrating for everyone as well, which is good. Have you got dahlias and such like, then, get them growing. I pinched my dahlias out the other day just to give them a little bit of stimulus to get them nice and bushy. Try and do that. It delays flowering but a little while, but you'll get much stronger plants, which is good as well. And I suppose a bit of pruning, Peter, as well. I mean, Forsythia
I pruned my cherry.
Oh, right, okay.
Because I had a couple of branches that were sort of growing into each other, and I thought, that's not right. But now the tree's growing again, I can cut it back. I know I chopped off a few branches with flowers on, so I won't get so many cherries, but maybe the squirrels and the pigeons won't get so many. But it's nice to get that done.
Yeah, now the sap's, you know, flowing in all the prunus family, you can do it, and you can do that right up till probably the end of June, so you've got a nice window of pruning opportunity there as well. And talking about pruning, of course, third week in May, Chelsea Flower Show, but it's the Chelsea chop time. So that's that traditional thing where we go along and we cut back a lot of our herbaceous plants, which usually get too tall, too leggy, too straggly, which tend to topple over. So if you cut things like, you know, your sedums and your heleniums, things which generally get too tall, cut them back by half or even by two thirds.
Okay.
Again, it'll keep the plants nice and short and nice and compact.
Mm.
And also it will sort of stagger your flowering time as well, which might be useful in the garden too.
Earthing up potatoes. They're growing now, aren't they?
That's
the thing that I do try and get round to doing, is that you can try and keep up with the potatoes.
Yes. I've been a bit late with mine going into the bags, actually. So they were covered, and they'll start to be popping through shortly. But yes, so if you've got them in containers, just put a little bit of compost on every couple of weeks until you get to the top of the pot. But remember to leave a decent space at the top so you can get water and feed into the bags. That's quite crucial. And I suppose the other thing to do is protecting from the dreaded pests as well. So if you've got brassicas on your plot, cauliflowers, kales, maybe put some Enviromesh over them to keep the flea beetles out.
Yep.
And obviously keep off the pigeons as well. So a little bit of protection around those, which will be good as well. And I think one of my pet hates, I'm not growing gooseberries these days, but I used to grow them, is, of course, gooseberry sawfly, which can literally come in overnight and basically denude your strawberry plant, your gooseberry plant of all its leaves. So if you do see the little caterpillar, remove those quickly and keep on top of those as well. So quite a bit to do there as well. Feeding your bulbs. I mean, the tulips have been amazing this year, haven't they? Oh.
Yours have.
Oh, sorry.
Mine haven't. Oh. I got one up. I planted my Red Riding Hood.
Yes.
And only one came up this year. Last year I had, I'm going to say, a dozen down the side of my drive. Looked fabulous. Yeah. Well chuffed with them. This year, one.
Oh, right.
And it didn't even flower. So I'm going to blame the children. I think they've walked all over them.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, the tulips have done really well, haven't they?
They have, yeah. And the
irises are looking like they're a bit early, I think, but flowering well.
Yeah. Another thing, I noticed lilies, my normal lilies, they're well up to what they usually are. So they've had a bit of a feed, but obviously keeping an eye for the lily beetle too.
Excellent. And one of the questions I got for you, Chris, is I know outside the garden centre we planted a lot of daffodils and Mickey went round and deadheaded them.
He did,
and
did a good
shot
job.
Them all. Yep. He's taken the whole lot off. Should we now go and put, say, a load of liquid feed over the top of them?
Absolutely.
Do you think that'll help as well?
It would be good to get a high potassium feed. So going back, good old tomato feed, basically, if that could be mixed up in a watering can and applied around the base of all those bulbs in the grass, that would be good.
Okay.
A couple of applications of that over the next next 2 or 3 weeks.
That would be good.
Yeah, it would be good. We'll get some even more flowers next year then. Yeah.
And as I am the champion of lazy gardening, I also spotted a box of damaged Growmore in the store. Do you think that would help if we sprinkled that over sort of the area? I know it's not high potassium,
no.
But it's a...
It's better. I mean, if we've got it to use, it would be good to go around any sort of ground cover plants we might have around. Yeah.
So you can use Growmore just to literally sprinkle around the surface and off we go.
Absolutely fine. Yeah, and of course Growmore is very useful. It's very quick acting as well. So with the weather we're having now, and you know, we're going to have some hopefully showery weather with the emphasis on warmth. That's perfect, really, for applying fertilizers. So yes,
that'd be good then. Yeah, excellent. Indeed, yeah. Thanks for that, Chris.
And on the aquatic side of things, then I know all our aquatic plants are in now. So if you've got water lilies, make sure perhaps that they're obviously gradually lower to the
ground. Yeah, don't drown the lilies.
No, can't do that.
Make sure, because they grow, when you buy them, they're obviously, the leaves are only a few inches long and they're in very shallow trays. But so, yeah, move them down in the water column slowly so that leaves are, if you've got leaves that have already broken the surface, that they still get to breathe the surface air. And obviously, marginals can go in now. The oxygenators, get some of those in as well, and everything will start growing well.
And that, what I did around my little pond, I just started to put a few more plants in. I decided to take some of my hostas out of the pots, because I've got a lot of them in pots, to soften the pond as well. So and see how they go. The soil is quite damp there anyway, so obviously they'll benefit from the extra moisture. And so will the slugs probably, but never mind.
Great
stuff. We persevere with those as well.
And garden furniture, get the jet washer out, give that a quick blast, because it must be nearly time for barbecues.
Yes, hopefully. I mean, May is always a good... Yeah, we do get some warm days in May, so we've got to really just make sure everything's ready, isn't it? And the garden furniture is nice and clean, and I actually washed some of my cushions from my garden furniture yesterday.
Okay.
Gave them a little bit of a clean, ready for the day.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get a nice sunny evening that we can get to sit out in the garden.
But that's right, to enjoy it as well, yes. And I suppose the other thing really, Peter, is obviously we've got issues with slugs and snails this year. We know because of the winter it didn't kill many off. Try and get rid of those if we can. So a little bit of a torchlight vigil each evening is obviously a good thing. And obviously get rid of them, dispose of them, and that make our gardens a little bit better, more productive, hopefully, as well through the course of the next few weeks.
Brilliant. Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Chris.
So we've got our next guest coming up.
Now this one, he's a bit of a star, isn't he?
He is.
I didn't find a video on peppers by him, but you can find an awful lot of videos by him
on YouTube,
can't you? He's a bit of a sensation on YouTube.
So we'll be speaking to Hugh Richards, and he's had his new book's come out, literally, Self-Sufficient Gardener.
Okay.
So I'm really looking forward to having a chat with him and finding out how you can make a small plot ever so productive.
Brilliant. Yeah, because that's on the 15th, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That one goes out. It's always good to...
Yeah.
So every couple of weeks we put the stars of the shows in the middle of the month.
Indeed, yeah, and also they said, you know, please subscribe, you know, keep the dig.
Well, yeah, because our show's on YouTube. Mm, yeah. I hadn't really realised this, but if you want to listen to something at work, maybe, mm-hmm. whilst on the computer, and it's up there on YouTube. And yeah, if you do subscribe, I guess that'll push us up the ratings. And
be nice. Yes, that'd be nice.
We'd love that. We'd like to be, one day we'd like to be top of the polls or something. Well, but
top five would be nice.
Top five, yeah, whatever. But if you can subscribe on your listener or whatever that those things are.
Yeah, and as always, to our wonderful Digit crowd, you know, if you've got any questions, any, you know, if you'd like to hear a particular guest, let us know.
Contact definitely, us. We'll get in touch and say hi.
Indeed.
Always good to hear from you. Brilliant. Excellent. Okay then, Chris.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Today's show was brought to you by Buckingham Garden Centre and Nurseries. The show was hosted by Chris Day and Peter Brown. The show was produced by Peter Brown. And our thanks to Chilton Music Therapy for providing the music. Thanks for listening.
At Chilton Music Therapy, we want everyone to know the difference that music can make in their lives. From parents and their premature babies in hospital, to grandparents with dementia. We provide music therapy and community music services to people of all ages and needs across England. We work both digitally and in person in people's homes, care homes, schools, hospitals and hospices. Find out more at chilternmusictherapy.co.uk.